a distressingly keen air about him, especially for someone so addled by drink. It was a face marred by indolence, riddled by insolence, but an interesting face that she could not deny. Could you take me to see your family? She asked, trying her best to affect an air of humility. In such a situation, perhaps even begging was not beyond her. No, queen of a land I care nothing about, Artan laughed at his own joke. I won't. Artan, son of Tolu. Musa Zaragoza's sonorous voice rang out from along the shore. It was not loud, nor was it demanding. Nevertheless, Artan rubbed his nose with the back of one hand, frowning with frustration. He groaned, the sound much louder than the situation warranted. It was only a series of names, yet it seemed to signify so much. Please, Sherazad said, shrugging away her confusion. She took a step toward the boy. I need your help. Artan pressed a palm into his forehead, exasperated. I shouldn't help you, and I have no desire to take a snipe like you anywhere. She gnawed at her lip. Please. At least not until you learn to defend yourself. You're like a newborn colt. I can see everything you're capable of doing, which is a great deal of nothing, save run your mouth. He snorted. Come back tomorrow night. Once you learn to control basic magic, I'll take you to see my aunt. She won't help anyone she doesn't respect, and she'll laugh you out of the room before burning you out of existence. Artan scowled once more at the shoreline, then kicked at the water, sending a salty mist high into the air. Still at a loss, Sherazad watched as the boy continued to exert his irritation on the hapless sea. Thank you, she said softly. After my less than gracious behavior earlier, I know I don't deserve... Oh, I intend to exact revenge upon you for this. Make no mistake. Artan eyed her askance. And I always get what I want. Something about the way he looked at her made Sherazad regret the decision to ask him for help. That same sense of danger intensified about him, like the feeling right before falling. Why? What exactly made you change your mind? Because Musa Abaga asked me, and Musa Abaga asks for very little in return for offering me a safe haven. He sneered, sharp and biting. Don't worry. I have no interest in you. I like nice girls, and you are not nice at all. You're selfish and spiteful. Startled by this pronouncement, Sherazad began to protest. I'm not... Don't misunderstand me. I'm pleased by it. It means we can be friends one day. Why in God's name would I want to be your friend? Artan fell back into the water with a strangely contented smile. Because... I'm just as selfish and spiteful as you are. Where there is ruin. The fireball hurtled through the darkness, streaking across the sand, right toward her face. Sherazad tried, truly she did, but at the last moment, all she could manage was to throw herself into a patch of glimmering powder at her feet. Useless. A deep voice cracked out at her like a whip. Just a complete waste of time. I hate him. Gritting her teeth, Sherazad clenched fistfuls of sand, wanting desperately to fling them into Artan Temujin's smug face. Are you angry, little snipe? Artan continued. Good. So am I. This makes the second... No, wait. Third night in a row, you've arrived at the temple and ruined my evening with the moon. She unfurled to her feet, dusting off her palms. Pardon me for ruining what would have been an otherwise productive evening. I'm pleased you agree with me. For the moon would surely have offered me more entertainment than your pitiful attempts at magic. He snorted. Such gifts, wasted on such tripe. Bastard. A rush of blood heated her cheeks. If I had a fireball, I'd send it straight between your legs. But I worry there would be little to burn. Artan laughed, loud and without a care. At least your sense of humor offers something to recommend you, though I've never been one for skinny, angry girls. He cast her a questioning glance. Does the Caliph of Khorasan like the way you look? Of course he does. Wretched dolt. He leaned back on his heels. Beauty fades, but a pain in the ass is forever. Ha, I suppose you would know. Another fireball blazed to life in his palm. That I would, Artan grinned, waggling his brows. And I would take heed if I were you. When she broke into a run again, Artan groaned behind her. The old adage is true, Sherzad al-Haizuran. We only run from things that truly scare us. Then I am truly afraid of fire, Artan Temujin. Another loud groan. Cease with being afraid and begin doing something about it. Despite her distress, Sherzad tried to conjure the feeling of warmth that flared to life whenever her skin came in contact with the carpet. But she couldn't. It was impossible. Like grasping for the stars. She'd tried now for 2 consecutive nights. The only conclusion she could come to was this. Her power did not arise from within her. Instead, she absorbed it from things around her. When she'd first offered this suggestion to Artan, he'd laughed, his head thrown back and his mouth a fathomless chasm. Then he'd proceeded to attack her with a controlled volley of fire. He'd wanted her to, at the very least, defend herself. Artan wanted her to toss aside spinning balls of fire, or move other objects into their path to repel them, with naught but the wish to do so. It had been her turn to laugh, head thrown back in equally exaggerated fashion. Artan believed that, if she were pressed by the thought of immediate danger, perhaps her body would react on instinct. So, for the past 2 nights, they'd been confined to the beach. He'd begun by threatening her with small, slowly swirling circles of flame. Sherzad had run from them in a near panic. Indifferent, Artan had proceeded to actual churning spheres of death, which were decidedly harder to avoid. All Sherzad had to show for it were multiple bruises from the many times she'd thrown herself into the sand. All Artan had to show for it was mounting frustration. "You're a terrible teacher," Sherzad cried. "This method was flawed from the beginning." She neared the lapping waves, slowing her strides. "If you're suggesting I'm flawed, then you're correct." Stopping in her paces, Sherzad leaned forward, gasping for breath. Lesson concluded for the evening. Not quite. She turned around, more than a little unsettled by his tone. Sure enough, Artan began firing another series of shots directly at her. Orb after orb of rolling flames flew from his outstretched palms. Sherzad panicked. There was no way she could dodge them all. Don't run, Artan shouted. Make them run from you. Make me believe I'm not taking a sheep to be sheared by wolves when I take you to my aunt. I can't, she shrieked, aghast at the number of fire spheres spinning toward her. Not knowing what else to do, Sherzad made a dash for the water and dove beneath the waves. She held her breath for as long as she could, treading beneath the churning surf. Then she kicked for the surface and emerged in waist-deep water, sputtering for air. Sherzad! She peeled back a curtain of hair just in time to see a final ball of fire spin toward her. There was no time to react. It crashed against her, burning through her chemise and into her stomach. For a moment, there was nothing but shock. From the shoreline, Sherzad heard Artan shouting in a strange language. The ball of fire turned back on itself and disappeared in a feather of smoke. She couldn't even manage to scream. Around her, the smell of burning flesh mingled on the sea breeze. Her knees started to tremble as a wave collided against her. The salt water on her bare skin stunned her back into feeling, into agony. Sherzad fell toward the sea. A cry caught on her lips. Idiot. Artan gathered her in his arms and dragged her from the foaming surf back onto the shore. Absolute fool, he muttered. The shaking spread from her legs into her arms. Her teeth began to chatter. It's on fire. Sherzad dug her fingers into his wrist. My skin, it's... Kneeling along the shore, Artan pushed her back against the hard sand. Complete moron. Stop, I couldn't... I'm not talking about you. Without another word, Artan stripped back the scorched bits of linen around her stomach. That time, Sherzad managed a scream. Shut up, shut up! Artan tugged at an earring, his expression pained. Lie still and I'll fix it. I swear I'll fix it. Though his words were wrong, his face was strangely right. His jaw was fixed, the diagonal scar through his lip white. He pressed both hands to her shoulders in an attempt to steady her quaking. A jolt blazed through her. The dark centers of Artan's eyes spread, like a drop of ink through water. His hands moved from her shoulders to hover above her stomach. From the tips of his fingers bloomed an unsteady light. But it wasn't a warm light. Something viciously cold tugged at her center. Tugged through her skin. A tremor rolled down her spine, as though the very air around them was prickly and alive. The ink in Artan's eyes began to change color. Began to brighten to a stormy gray. He swallowed a cry of pain, then fell back onto his heels. When Sherzad sat up, she glanced down at her stomach. An ugly red welt remained, but it was nothing like the burn she'd expected, the pain nothing worse than that of a few days in the hot sun. It took her only a moment to realize what had happened. For on Artan Temujin's bare stomach, in the exact same spot, was a burn like hers. Except his was far worse. His was blistered. Sores formed along its length. The sores she should have had. Somehow, Artan had transferred the worst of her injury onto his skin. You didn't have to do that, she sputtered, a salty lock of hair caught on her lips. It was a ridiculous thing to say, an obvious thing to say, yet she felt it should be said nonetheless. His mouth bent into a smile resembling a scythe. You're welcome. Thank you, Sherzad replied, still at a loss. After a beat of unsettling calm, a shudder racked through him, and Artan collapsed into the sand. We always seem to do things hind over end, don't we? It appears so. His chest heaved from exertion. This, he motioned between their matching burns, isn't working. No, she leaned up on an elbow, her expression morose. It's not. Such a pity. Artan remained prostrate along the shore, lost in thought, regarding the night sky above. My aunt will eat you alive. Why do you think your aunt will eat me alive? Sherzad asked haltingly. And if you know this, why did you agree to take me to her? What is the real reason you are helping me, Artan Temujin? When Artan finally deigned to speak, his gaze remained fixed on the stars. Have you ever heard the story, The Girl Who Grasped the Moon? Of course, every small child has heard it. Tell it to me as you heard it. To what purpose? Humor me. Artan pointed at his blistered stomach. This once. Shahrazad's brows pinched together. Just this once. She turned her gaze toward the sky. There was a girl who lived in a stone tower, surrounded by white dragons that did her every bidding. When she desired a sticky pastry, she had but to ask. When she wished to sleep, they turned the sky to night with the beat of their wings, the sun to moon with a simple roar. Though the girl wanted for nothing, she continued to want more and more of everything and anything. But more than anything, the girl wished to be powerful. To her, the dragons always possessed more power than any being in the world, because they were able to make her every wish come true. Artan heaved a breath, holding it for a spell. At this odd behavior, Shahrazad's confusion swelled further, and she stopped speaking. When Artan eyed her sidelong, Shahrazad continued. One night, when one of her dragons brought her a thick gold necklace she'd requested from a distant land, the girl smelled the strange perfume adorning its silken wrappings and decided she could no longer live with wanting this power. She had to have it. The girl demanded the dragon take her to its magic's source. The dragon turned to the full moon, its distress plain on its horned face. The girl did not care. She insisted the dragon take her to the moon so that she might harness its power. They flew toward it, a volley of stars collecting in their midst. The girl gathered the stars and from them fashioned a rope. Then, though the dragon roared a final warning, the girl threw a ring of stars around the moon, all while laughing like a bell tolling in the night. Shahrazad stopped to glance at Artan. But, like so many things of power, the moon refused to be contained. At this, Artan smiled, but it was not a smile of amusement. It was a smile of something much darker and deeper. The moon began to glide through the sky. Torn from her dragon's back, the girl clung to the rope of stars. She cried out, asking the moon to grant her wish or release her. Like a chilling breeze, the moon's reply chased across her skin. You wish to be powerful. Then I will make you into my shadow. A moon to command the lost stars. But know that such a thing will come at a cost. Without hesitating, the girl trilled with laughter. I care not about cost. Take all my worldly possessions, for I have no need of them once I possess such power. The moon's words wafted through the night air, colder than a first snow. Very well, girl. I have long desired a true companion. Then, in a swirl of stardust, the moon turned the girl into its shadow, bereft of all light, tethered to it for all time. This shadow moon, the new moon, was granted power only a few nights a year, but never power enough to free itself from its bonds. This is why the moon we know seems to disappear, Artan finished quietly. Overshadowed. Eclipsed. Shahrazad nodded once. Always chasing the true moon. Their voices fell silent as the waves crashed in the distance. Why are you here, little snipe? Artan began. Is it really for your father? Yes, her response was swift. Nothing more? At this, Shahrazad hesitated. Of course she was here for her father, but she was also here for another reason, a reason that needed to remain shrouded in mystery. Why do you ask? Artan turned his head to hers. Because I know there's more. I know you're queen of a broken city, and of a kingdom on the brink of war, that your king is a monster. Shahrazad said nothing. Her fingers moved to the bare skin of her stomach, tentatively grazing her wound. It felt hot to the touch. Her mind's eye returned to only moments ago, when Artan Temujin's face had lost all hints of pretense. When signs of true remorse, signs of richer emotion, were all too evident. Trust is an interesting matter when it comes to Artan. He will not give it to those who do not offer it first. Perhaps it was time to put a small measure of trust in this boy. Khalid is not a monster, not at all. Her heart lulled for a beat in the warmth of memory. Truly, Artan studied her further. Then what is he? Why are you so curious? Her eyes narrowed. Why did you agree to help me, Artan Temujin? Artan did not reply immediately. That story about the girl? It's about my family. What? Trying to conceal her shock, Sherzad turned to face him. Don't misunderstand me. Facets of your story are ridiculous, heavily embellished by time, but its core is rooted in truth. One of my ancestors stole a powerful bringer of light to become an equally powerful wish granter. In return, her maker trapped her, bound her to him forever. A powerful genie trapped in a hollow sword. His expression was equal parts bitter and blithe. For a moment, Sherazade was filled with disbelief. You wanted to know why I agreed to help you. It's mostly because Musa Abaga asked me to, and because I am bound by my ancestors' foolishness, bound to be a trapped granter of wishes. Musa Abaga has kept me safe these many years, safe from those who would enslave me, make of me a dragon, who does nothing but bring gold necklaces to thankless little girls. He laughed bitterly. Musa Zaragoza protects me from my family's curse. He keeps us, me, Parissa, Moss, and the others, hidden and teaches us to control our powers. Protects us all here at the Fire Temple. Here, when we are asked to use our abilities, it is always our choice. Here, we are never slaves to our magic. But why would Musa Effendi need to protect you from your family? My family is every bit as power-hungry as the girl who grasped the moon. They are monsters imbued with strange magic. My aunt safeguards them in a mountain fortress, but... Artan paused, his face grim. She's made mistakes before. My parents were casualties of her arrogance. They left the fortress, seeking a way to destroy their bonds. The magic they leaked into the world brought about terrible consequences. As a result, my aunt expects me to stay near and do as I'm told. Serve whom I'm told. So I ran away. Artan watched her closely as he spoke. I find my aunt's control to be another form of slavery. Sherazade mirrored his scrutiny, taking care in preparing her next question. Is your aunt very powerful? He snorted. She could set fire to this temple with a single belch and light every candle in Khorasan with a mere hint of her flatulence. Be serious. She's powerful. Artan laughed without guile. And, like you, completely devoid a sense of humor. Sherazade let another small stretch of time pass. The sound of waves crashing upon one another growing louder, much like her thoughts. Is she powerful enough to cure the sick? She gnawed her lip. Powerful enough to break a curse. Ah, he cut her a glance, all signs of humor gone. There it is. Are you the one cursed? Sherazade closed her eyes, then shook her head. Well, she'd need to speak with the one cursed, Artan replied. And she would need to know what kind of magic was used. What if we don't know? She whispered. He brought both hands behind his neck, weaving his fingers through one another. After a time, Artan responded, his words soft. You'll have to bring him, Sherazade, your king. He'll have to speak with my aunt, if she's to help him. Fear gripped her chest. Though she'd meant for him to help her, which entailed him knowing the truth, it didn't trouble her any less to hear it spoken aloud. "Sometimes you make it so difficult to despise you," Sherzad mumbled. "I know," Artan grinned, still staring up at the stars. They continued observing the night sky in companionable silence until the sound of footsteps swished in the sand nearby. "Sherzad, John." Musa's deep voice rang out in the darkness. She stood, a sharp pang zinging from the burn at her waist. "Yes?" "If I could speak with you for a moment." He reached into the folds of his cloak. "I've brought something for you." In his hand was a square of jade, half the width of his palm, strung onto a slim circle of dark leather, meant to be worn about the neck. The surface of the polished green stone was covered in intricate markings. "The talisman we spoke of," Musa said quietly. "The one to ward away Khalid's sleeplessness." "I'm not certain it will do much," Musa murmured. "Again, it will likely only stave off the effects for a short while. But I thought to help in whatever small way." Artan yawned loudly at this. Sherzad glared at him before glancing up at the tall figure before her. His black brows were stippled in white, furrowed by concern. "Thank you, Musa Effendi. This is far greater than anything I could have hoped for." Musa nodded. "Please tell Khalid, I'm sorry I wasn't stronger those many years ago. I'm sorry for leaving him alone. But I'm here now, should he ever have need of me." With that, he placed the talisman in her hand and bowed deeply, his fingertips grazing his forehead. As her thumb brushed over the etchings carved into the jade, Sherzad tried her best to ignore the undeniable weight settling around her heart. The weight of realization, and the thrill of certainty. "I'm going home." A Mouse's Call to Arms. The moon was a half-disc of alabaster. In the distance, the clouds churned in tenebrous suggestion, just like the twist of nerves in Irsa's stomach. Alas, she was not a good sneak, for her toes seemed to snag on everything in sight. 20 paces ahead, Sherzad moved from shadow to shadow with a sure-footedness Irsa would have envied were she not so aggravated. Were she not so angry? Irsa drew her cloak tighter about her and caught her ankle on another tent binding. Muttering one of Sherzad's choicest epithets, Irsa tore her sandal loose, then squinted through the dark. Her sister had disappeared. Without a moment's pause, Irsa broke into a run. As she rounded the curve of the next tent, a hand darted from a pool of shadow and snared her wrist. "Why are you following me?" It was both a demand and accusation. Irsa gasped. Sherzad's eyes flashed through the gloom. Shocked from its temporary stupor, Irsa's pulse began rampaging through her body. Hot on its heels raced her indignation. Irsa ripped her arm from Sherzad's grasp. "Where are you going?" Fury dotted every word. Sherzad's jaw dropped. Clearly, Sherzad had not expected Irsa to be cross with her. Sherzad hardened her gaze. "I asked you first." "I don't care. Tell me where you're going. Have you not learned anything after what happened with Taimur? Don't you know it's dangerous for you to disappear alone like this? I can't understand why you would..." Her sister reached for Irsa, pleading and conciliatory. "Irsa." "No," Irsa said. "I don't want a long-winded excuse. I want you to tell me where you're going and why. Now." Sherzad sighed. "Of all nights, I wish you hadn't followed me tonight, Irsa John." She glanced into the desert with a wistful look. "Would you please let me go this once? I promise I'll take you with me tomorrow. I swear I will. I don't believe you. Irsa's eyes began to well. She bit back the tears, cursing her wretched sensitivity. Why should I believe you? You didn't even go to see Baba today, not once. Did you know he opened his eyes when I fed him his broth this afternoon? It was only for a short while, but he looked for you. And you weren't there. I had to lie for you while you slept, Shazi, just like yesterday and the day before that. I'm so sorry. Sherzad took her hand and squeezed. You can't keep doing as you please and expecting everyone to wait for you, as though we have nothing better to do, as though we are capable of nothing else. I know. That was never my intention. Sherzad chewed her lower lip. But can we please speak of this tomorrow? Her eyes darted into the desert again, and Irsa felt the heat of resentment rise anew, pricking at the corners of her eyes. Go. She shook off her sister's grasp. Go to wherever it is you're disappearing, to wherever it is that is more important than here and now. Her sister reached for her hand again. I promise, Al. From now on, only make promises you intend to keep. And be safe, Shazi. Please, stay safe. Sherzad paused, her features tight, before she slipped into the shadows ahead without so much as a glance over her shoulder. Irsa's feet felt leaden as she made her way back through the encampment. Each step seemed involuntary. She dragged her toes, making patterns in the sand. When she looked up again, Irsa realized she'd stopped outside a tent that was not her own. What was she doing? Irsa stood outside Rahim al-Din Walad's tent like a ninny absent purpose. Absent reason. Then she made a decision and cleared her throat. Rahim? It sounded like a mouse's call to arms. Irsa stood taller and tried again. Rahim! Better, but still not exactly the roar of a lion. She jumped and wheeled when his tent opened in a burst of lanky appendages. What's wrong? Rahim swiped at the sleep crusting his eyes. What was wrong? Why had Irsa even come here? Aisha told me a story, she blurted without thought. Do you want to hear it? What? He scrubbed at his disheveled scalp, his gaze incredulous. Irsa, you can't be serious, he said. It's the middle of the night. Never mind. The mouse returned only to take its leave. Wait, wait. Rahim reached for her elbow. Tell me. Irsa stared up at him, lost in heavy lids and ink-black eyelashes. Had he always been so tall? She told me this desert was once a sea. Irsa paused to steady her voice. That it was filled with all kinds of fish that danced in shining waters and swam beneath a perfect sun. Until one day, a disgruntled little fish decided he was tired of swimming and wanted to fly. So he went to the sea witch, who asked him to collect all the white flowers along the farthest reaches of the sea and bring them to her. From their petals, she would fashion him wings. When the little fish brought the sea witch a woven nettle filled with white flowers, she cast a spell and a black shadow bloomed across the sun. It was as though night had fallen for all time. The sea dried up, and all the beautiful fish began to disappear, save for the lone fish with his white petal wings. When the sun finally reappeared, the little fish felt such guilt for what he had done that he flew into its scorching light, his wings bursting into a thousand pieces. Now, when you look across the desert and along the shore, you can still see how he paid for his wings, the lovely white shells with the flowers etched onto their surfaces. She finished the tale in a rush of words, all spoken in a single breath. Rahim smiled at her patiently. I'm not a good storyteller, Irsa whispered, the remnant of a tear sliding crookedly down her face. He reached forward and caught it with his thumb. Embarrassed, Irsa pulled back. It was a mistake to have come here, wasn't it? A faint gust of wind blew around them, enveloping her in the scent of linseed oil and oranges. Rahim must have eaten oranges before falling asleep. How wonderful. What's wrong, Irsa John?
She keeps leaving me behind, Irsa said softly. Everyone keeps leaving me, and I'm worried about her. But mostly, I'm alone.
Without a word, Rahim sat before the tent and patted the sand beside him. She took the spot, tucking her knees to her chest. Rahim looked at her, his eyes unwavering. You're not alone now. Smiling, Irsa rested her cheek against his shoulder, and it was enough. A perfect balance. The rain started to fall when the gates of Ray appeared along the horizon. Fat, unwieldy drops began to plink on Sherzad's shoulders and splat on the corners of the magic carpet. She'd felt the storm's threat as she soared beneath the gathering clouds. The metallic scent had woven through the wind, toying at the ends of her tresses, spurring her onward, all the while sending her blood surging through her body. Khalid. As Sherzad neared the city gates, a current of air buoyed the carpet, taking her past the torch-lit battlements, beyond the sights of any wandering sentries. The slumbering city was as she remembered it, yet not. Sections of Khorasan's crown jewel looked as though a giant fist had smashed down upon its surface. Others were scorched beyond recognition. For a few breaths, a feeling of despondency slid its hold around Sherzad's heart. Then, as she directed the carpet lower, she saw signs of hope. The light color of newly hewn granite against old. The smell of sap from freshly milled wood. The piles of organized debris. The stink of burning refuse. Around her was a city all but forsworn. Half in ruin, yet half reborn. Her heart swelled, shaking off despondency's grip. The people of Ray had not tucked tail and run. Nor had Khalid. Sherzad sent the carpet higher, toward a broken palace of granite and marble glistening in the first flush of a summer's rain. Toward the broken palace she called home. A trill of apprehension snaked through her, igniting a flurry of questions. Khalid is just as stubborn as I am. What if he refuses to trust Artan or Artan's family? What if he rejects their offer of help? What if he's resigned to living out his days with this curse? Then the most selfish question of all, the one she'd refused to allow herself to consider, began echoing through her mind. What if he's furious with me for leaving Ray? For leaving him without a word? The fat droplets grew long and lean as they started to multiply. Without warning, the clouds burst, showering a sweet silver rain upon the city. A hazy mist formed above the earth as the water sizzled onto the stone and soaked through the parched soil. Sherzad landed on the balcony outside Khalid's antechamber. She waited in silence for a time, her pulse drumming in her ears. Her emotions ran a wild gamut, and she trembled despite the warm summer breeze. He was so close, almost within reach. But Sherzad couldn't bring herself to slide open the carved screens in front of her. She'd left him, even if she'd done it to protect him, to protect the love they shared. She'd left him alone. And she'd made the decision to do so without him. Khalid had not run from his obligations. That much had been quite evident to her, as she'd flown over Ray. She'd seen his mind for organization, his quiet intelligence, in every aspect of the restoration, in the logical engineering, in the careful attention to detail. He was everywhere. Even if no one else saw this simple truth, Scheherazade did. She was the one who'd left behind a burning disaster without so much as a glance back. Left the boy she loved to manage an insurmountable task without her. Would he look at her with eyes of betrayal? Eyes of judgment? Or would they be the same eyes as always? Eyes that had been for her and no other. She was soaked to the bone now. The sweet-smelling rain had drenched her hair and was dripping from its ends. Her chemise clung to her body, and her deep blue tika sash trailed against the onyx stone beside her sandaled feet. How much time had she wasted being afraid on the balcony? Enough. Squaring her shoulders, Scheherazade started for the screens, and they slid open. She halted in her tracks, refusing to look up. Scheherazade knew it was Khalid. She sensed rather than saw him. As always, as ever, as a rose to the sun. Her knees shook. A chill ran from the nape of her neck to the soles of her feet. Scheherazade. Low and unassuming, unmistakable, when Scheherazade met his gaze, everything around her melted away. Even the driving rain came to a sudden standstill. A moment suspended in time. A pair of amber eyes across a balcony. And there was no more fear. No more worry. No more judgment. Her knees no longer shook. Her heart steadied in her chest. In that moment of perfect balance, she understood. This peace? These worries silenced without effort? It was because they were two parts of a whole. He did not belong to her, and she did not belong to him. It was never about belonging to someone. It was about belonging together. Scheherazade walked toward him, her head high. Khalid did not blink. Shazi. Yes, she replied, her voice clear and strong, just as she felt. His eyes narrowed infinitesimally, as though guarded in their disbelief, as though undeserving of their truth. The gesture was so achingly familiar that Scheherazade wanted to launch herself into his arms. But she was soaked, and Khalid looked as pristine as always. His black hair was faultless. The sharp planes of his face brought to mind a hawk in flight. Piercing, yet coolly aloof, as though he could gauge a man at a glance, had he the care to do so. The fine linen of his garments hung across the trim figure of a seasoned warrior. His eyes gleamed molten gold, and they said all without a word. Scheherazade drew her sodden waves to one side, splashing water by his feet. I'm sorry. She wrinkled her nose. That was... He pulled her into his chest, a hand tangling through her hair. The beat of his heart rang loud and true against her cheek. The only measure of time that mattered. She exhaled fast only to inhale deep, to breathe in his scent. The scent of sandalwood and sunshine. Her fingers moved across his skin, making memories of their own. The hands of a master swordsman, the lips of her greatest love, the heart of a king. Khalid. Following their embrace, Scheherazade saw Khalid carefully maintain his distance. Though it frustrated her, she understood why. It was not to punish her. It was to protect her. She knew him well enough to realize this, and Scheherazade had yet to divulge why she'd returned. Perhaps talking was of greater importance, for now. Khalid listened, the stern set of his eyebrows high in his forehead, as Scheherazade told him about the magic carpet, as she told him about the strange new ability she had yet to fully control. But, save for that initial display of emotion, he offered nothing further on the matter.
Instead, Khalid procured a change of clothes for her and, infuriatingly, turned away while she stripped off her drenched garments. At that, Sherazad was forced to swallow a rather cheeky comment. They were married, after all. Alas, she understood this behavior as well. This time he was protecting himself. So despite Sherazad's desire to challenge Khalid's resolve with a verbal assault, she chose a less direct approach, opting to wear the loose linen kameez he'd provided for her, and nothing else. After all, the sirwal trousers were much too large. Both garments were cut for a man. The kameez covered more than enough, for its hem fell close to her knees. More than appropriate, for now. Sherazad found herself smothering a rather inappropriate grin. When Khalid turned around, his eyebrows shot into his forehead again. Then he sighed, long and low. "Is something wrong?" Her voice sounded innocent, though her expression conveyed a sentiment far less so. Sherazad sat on the edge of his platformed bed, tucking her legs to one side. "Wrong is not exactly the right word." His retort was brusque, but there was a note of humor beneath it. Khalid strode through his poorly lit chamber, his movements fluid like those of a shadow limned in smoke. Sherazad followed him with her eyes, aware she likely resembled a predator stalking prey. He removed a cushioned settee from behind his ebony desk and brought it before the bed. When Khalid sat down, he made a point of the distance between them, a point Sherazad was not meant to mistake. At this, she frowned. "That's taking matters a bit far, don't you think?" "If I intend to think, then no. One could argue it's not far enough." Khalid leaned against the settee, his eyes flashing, focused, unflinching. No, Sherazad was not the predator, not anymore. "Well, then..." Flustered, she made a motion to stand.
"Really, I..."
"Shazi." Khalid lifted a hand to stop her.
"You can't. You shouldn't stay."
She'd never known Khalid to struggle with words before.
"I'm not staying."
Khalid sank lower into the ivory silk, then he nodded.
"But I have every intention of staying, eventually."
Sherazad raised her chin with an imperious air. "In fact, I intend to do far more than stay. I intend to flourish, once we break the curse." She let her statement carry through the vast chamber, defying the very walls to rise up and challenge her. Even in the weak light from the latticed lamp above, Sherazad saw Khalid's face soften. "If I thought there was a way to break this curse..."
"There may be," she interjected.
"But I need you to trust me, and not be angry with me for what I'm about to tell you."
"I do trust you."
"But will you be angry?" He said nothing, his eyes merely constricted at the edges, undoubtedly weighing their options or forming their strategies. "Some things do not change."
"You must know you have an abominable temper," Sherazad said with reproach. A smile ghosted across his lips.
"As do you, my queen." "We are not discussing my shortcomings," she sniffed. "Promise me you won't lose your temper until I finish talking." Again he said nothing.
"Khalid?"
He dipped his head once in acknowledgement.
"I went to the fire temple to see Musa Zaragoza."
Khalid stiffened. Already Sherazad could see him assembling his objections, so she barreled forward before he could begin.
"I know you harbor bitterness toward him because of what happened with your mother, of his failure to come to her aid, but he wishes to help now, and he was the one who gave me both the knowledge and the means to travel here unseen."
"I appreciate him helping you, Sherazad. A great deal."
But he didn't sound as though he did, save for the breath Khalid used to speak her name. The rest of his words were rote in tone, cold and perfunctory. Disappointed by his inability to forgive Musa, Sherzad leveled a withering stare in his direction. Khalid met her, glare for glare, until he exhaled in defeat, giving her leave to continue. One of his students at the Fire Temple has a relative who professes to be a powerful sorceress. It's possible she can offer us a way to undo the curse. Khalid's response was immediate, his posture unyielding. This kind of magic comes with a price, one I am not willing to pay. Please! Sherzad sat up, her damp hair falling over one shoulder. At least come with me and learn what that cost might be. No. His pronouncement was final. But Sherzad refused to be swayed. Khalid! I do not know these people, therefore they cannot be trusted. You said you trusted me! I trust you implicitly, but it would be irresponsible of me to trust Musa Zaragoza or his so-called students with my life, Khalid said cuttingly. And I doubly do not trust them with yours. Stop being so stubborn! Her bare feet fell to the onyx floor. Do not make me beg you, because I won't. I'll merely lose my temper or cry, and I have always secretly despised those who cry to wheedle their objectives. But if you force me to do it, Khalid ibn al-Rashid, I will, and I cry beautifully. She crossed her arms and pursed her lips. A corner of his mouth twitched. You do not cry beautifully. Liar? I'm not lying, he held her gaze. I rarely lie. She'd long suspected this to be the case. Yet Sherzad could not resist pressing Khalid further. You've never lied to me? He paused. Once. Oh? She peaked a slender brow. And when was that? In the souk, when you asked if I remembered my last dream, I said I did not. And you did? Khalid nodded. Sherzad took a cautious breath, wondering if it would be wiser not to push the matter. Will you tell me what your dream was about? At the time, it was less a dream and more a recurring nightmare. Khalid regarded her for a beat. I dreamed of sleeping beside a girl in my chamber. I don't remember her face, nor do I remember anything about her. I only remember how I felt. How did you feel? As though I'd found peace. His gaze grew even more intent, even more pointed. Oh. Sherzad looked away, toying with the sleeve of the borrowed kameez to conceal the flush in her cheeks. That night at the souk, Khalid lied because he thought this dream was about me. The last time I had this dream was the night before you came to the palace, he continued. I remember it well because I woke suddenly, searching for something that wasn't there. His eyes drifted to the alabaster wall. He was lost in thought. Lost in a familiar wasteland. A wasteland Sherzad hoped never to see again. She walked toward him, resolve firming her steps. That peace you seek is here, Sherzad whispered. Fight for it. I'll fight for it with you. I'll do whatever it takes. Her hands clenched around her sleeves. When I was in the desert, I woke each day and carried on with my life, but it wasn't living. It was merely existing. I want to live. You are where I live. Khalid stared up at her, his features inscrutable, his eyes inciting her heart to riot. I've missed the silence of you listening to me. Sherzad attempted a weak smile. No one listens to me as you do. His expression turned quizzical. You don't wait to speak, she clarified. You truly listen. Only to you, Khalid replied gently. At that, Sherzad reached a hand toward him, stopped just before his brow, as if seeking permission. He bent forward,
and her fingers sifted through the black silk of his hair. Khalid reached behind her knee, drawing her closer. "Fight with me," she said. At his silence, Shahrazad tugged his hair back, forcing him to look her in the eye. "I want a life with those I love around me, safe and happy. What do you want?" "To live," fiercely. "What else?" "To taste every breath." Khalid skimmed a hand down her leg. A frisson of heat shot up her spine. "What else?" Her voice shook. "To fall asleep each night with you by my side." Shahrazad took his face between her palms. "Then fight for it." His careful control shattered. Khalid stood suddenly, catching her to him. "Will you go with me?" she gasped as his hands moved higher. He nodded. Then Khalid pulled her close and crushed his mouth to hers. His tongue edged past her lips, and she breathed his name while he strode toward the bed, pouring their bodies onto the dull silk. She would never cease to be astounded by this, the flawless awareness behind every look, every whisper, every sigh. His words were a spark cast in oil. His touch was a fire against her skin. Shahrazad tugged the length of linen over her head, and Khalid rose to his knees and removed his kameez. He glanced down at her. Then everything stilled with an awful precipitousness. His jaw flexed. His knuckles turned white. He was furious. Beyond furious. His face was a lesson in rage. The quiet, all-consuming sort. It was at its worst when he was this quiet. As Khalid stared down at her body, she realized why. The bruises. The burn. "Khalid, who did this to you?" His voice was soft. Deathly soft. Its brutal assurance sent a shiver down her back. "Never forget, Khalid is not a forgiving man. To him, violence begets violence, and likely always will." "Don't," Shahrazad said gently. "Don't ruin our time together with anger. I am not hurt, and these injuries are my own fault, ones I would gladly take again and again because they've made me stronger. They've led me to you." "Shahrazad," she reached up to trace the mark on his collarbone, the faint bruise along his jaw. Then she shifted her fingers to the newest cuts on his hands, to the gash across his palm that had not yet healed. "I hate your scars, too," Shahrazad murmured. "But skin is skin, be it a man's or a woman's, and pain is pain. Don't lament mine more than I do yours, and trust that, if ever there comes a time when an injustice is done to me, you will be the first to know." She pressed a kiss to his injured palm. "And I will stand by your side as we write it." Shahrazad took his hand and placed it on the wound on her stomach. "I promise it doesn't hurt." She grinned almost teasingly. He frowned. "Liar." At that, Shahrazad pushed him onto his back, her hair scarving about her throat. She moved over Khalid. "I may be partial to roses, but I am not a fragile flower." "No," Khalid's mouth arced upward ever so slightly. "You are not." "Do you know why I adore roses?" Shahrazad untied the knot of his tikka sash with deliberate slowness. "I've always loved them for their beauty and their scent, but it's because of their thorns." His muscles tensed at her touch. "Because there's more to them than first meets the eye." She smiled down at Khalid, tracing her fingers along the curved hollows at his hips. "Do you know how much I missed you?" Khalid inhaled sharply. "I do." He grazed a thumb across her lower lip. "And do you know you make my life 1,000 times worth living?" Yes, her throat went dry. I do. Khalid's eyes fell upon the stretch of twine hanging from her neck. His fingers shifted to coil around the ring. I couldn't wear it on my hand anymore, Sherazade